It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll find out Wisconsin's hiring outlook and why it was just called robust by a recent survey.
First, we're getting an update on what's happening in Wisconsin's state legislature. This morning, the Senate approved limits on early voting after a heated debate on the bill last night.
Senators also passed some other election-related bills, one that changes residency requirements for poll workers and a bill regulating election observers. In addition to all the election-related proposals, the Senate just approved a bill that would make it harder to file in asbestos lawsuits.
Sean Johnson is here. He's WPR's state capitol reporter. He's giving us a rundown of these bills and what's been going on in the state legislature over the past couple of days. Sean, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
So I'm going to start with the controversial bill that would limit early voting hours and get rid of weekend voting. We talked about this yesterday on the program. What was the debate like in the Senate around this one?
It was mostly dominated by Democrats who weren't happy with the plan, especially today. When the Senate came back to give final passage to this bill, they talked about it for, I think, 20 minutes to an hour, and Republicans just didn't get up and talk about it today. They wanted to move on. You've got another number of Democrats, pretty much all Democrats, actually, are frustrated with this plan because they feel like it's targeting a couple cities where early voting has been embraced, Madison and Milwaukee in particular. Those are cities that tend to support Democrats, and so they don't see it as any coincidence that that's who's going to feel the effect of this bill. When you cut down early voting to 45 hours and eliminate weekend voting for early voting, in-person absentee voting, that's definitely going to be felt in those cities.
And we know the debate got pretty heated. Let's listen to a clip.
I know the senator from the 28th hates Milwaukee. She hates the poll workers. She hates that blacks and Latinos are coming out.
Obviously that's a soundbite that people are talking about today. And that was Democratic Senator Tim Carpenter from Milwaukee accusing Mary Lazick from West Bend about not liking minorities. Obviously, you could hear her objecting over the end of that. What is the fallout, Ben, from the comments?
Not a whole lot of fallout, really. I mean, you've had a few Republican senators say that Carpenter should apologize, but they really haven't pressed the issue too much. Everybody was back on the Senate floor again today. The temperature was a little bit cooler. You didn't have any episodes like that, but that does give you a pretty good idea of where Tim Carpenter was on this bill yesterday. He was very frustrated with it. And Mary Lazick was very frustrated with the way that she was being referred to by Tim Carpenter there. He kind of voiced what a lot of people subtly hint at, and that is that he believes that this is being geared towards holding down or oppressing the votes of minorities who vote for Democrats. Mary Lazick did not like that suggestion.
And where is this bill right now?
So this bill was changed a little bit in the Senate to spend some money, some state money, basically. It would reimburse municipalities for 50% of the costs of early voting if they decide to do that. So it's got to go to the Assembly now. I don't know if the Assembly is going to accept that. They might not. They might reject it, send it back to the Senate. But in any case, it's not headed right to the governor's desk yet. It still has to go to the Assembly, and so we're going to be hearing about this again the next couple weeks.
Well, another election-related bill passed the Senate. This one changes the residency requirements of poll workers. Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, this is something where right now poll workers have to come from the municipality or the ward where they live. Now they'd be able to come from anywhere in a county. You think about the practical effect of that. It means that no longer would, you have to find poll workers from within the city of Milwaukee or the city of Racine, for example. You could have those poll workers coming from suburban Milwaukee County or rural Racine County. And, in these situations, these poll workers are often a split, or you try to have a split between a Democratic and a Republican poll worker. at the polls, and so this gives a chance for Republicans to have more of their people, observing the polls and running the polls in the city.
How contentious was this one in the Senate?
This one also got pretty contentious today. They always get contentious when they get a little bit personal. And so the aforementioned Mary Lozick, kind of referenced irregularities in Racine's voting, Racine's recount in particular. And that really, ticked off Racine Democratic Senator John Lehman, who said, basically the only time Republicans are ever in Racine is that, they don't run candidates in the city. They hardly ever show their face. They only show up when it comes to election time, and they're looking to find problems, and they haven't been able to find any. And so he thinks that's where this push is coming from to, have more have poll workers come from anywhere within the county. It's a search for fraud that Lehman says has so far come up empty.
As I understand it, Republicans are looking to have these changes, these last two we've discussed, in place by the next election. Does that look like it's already tied up?
The poll workers, it's a possibility. I mean, we'll see if these things get through in the next few weeks, then they would be in place. I mean, another question mark that the governor really raised yesterday was that he said that he would be prepared to call a special session on voter ID if the Supreme Court rules Wisconsin's voter ID law that Republicans passed in Walker's first year in office, if the Supreme Court rules that unconstitutional, Walker said he'd like a special session to go back and address that. So, even though the legislature is scheduled to wrap up its regular business here in the first week of April, we might be back later this summer to debate that, depending on what the state Supreme Court does.
And how big a deal would a special session like that be?
I mean, voter ID is a pretty big deal, even though, in a sense, it's not, because most people have driver's license. You have a number of states that have voter ID laws. And so, in that sense, it's not as big as opponents might make it out to be. But when you look at Wisconsin historically, Wisconsin laws have been, written, geared toward encouraging voter turnout. And this voter ID is a step away from that. Even if you argue that it's not going to drive down turnout, it's certainly not something that's going to encourage it. And the fear among critics is that it's just going to make it harder for people to vote if they don't have the necessary ID and have trouble getting it.
Would it be an especially dramatic gesture for the governor to call a session like that?
We've had special sessions off and on. Sometimes they're sort of they're not as dramatic as you might think. A special session gets called and the legislature kind of sits around for a month until they decide what to do with a bill. Think about the tax cuts that just got passed that the governor wanted. He called those in a special session, and many weeks later, they finally sent that bill to his desk. So it doesn't have to necessarily be dramatic, but I think voter ID, just the nature of the proposal, is it's a big deal. And so if they came back later this spring or this summer to debate voter ID in an election year, it would be dramatic.
The Senate also passed a measure to allow election observers to get within 3 feet of voters. What issues were lawmakers debating on that one?
Yeah, this is another one where it was really Democrats who spoke today. And again, they're worried about what this is going to mean in urban situations in particular. And what it would do it would say that election observers, and if you've ever been, anybody can be an election observer. As a reporter, I had the chance to be an election observer just to observe how voting is going at a polling place. It would say that an election observer can get as close as 3 feet away from a voter. It'd be 3 to 8 feet. The maximum they could be placed away from a voter is 8 feet. And so this is being pushed by Republicans who say we want to keep a closer eye on what's going on at the polls. Democrats are saying what you're going to end up doing is bringing people in there to intimidate voters. And it's either going to scare people away from voting, or you're going to invite confrontation. And, you know, Senator John Erpenbach actually said today that you're going to end up having shouting matches and the police are going to get called. So, you know, this is one of those issues pretty much on any of these voting bills where the parties are pretty far apart. They were almost party line votes on all of them, the exception being Republican Senator Dale Schultz, who voted with Democrats on every one of them.
Well, moving on from election-related bills, the Senate passed a measure that will change asbestos lawsuits and the way that those proceed. What does the bill do?
Yeah, another one of these. Anytime you're dealing with tort reform issues or changing people's ability to sue in court, these are very partisan issues. There's a reason these get put off to the end or fought as you know, in the way that they do. It would say that if somebody's going to bring an asbestos lawsuit, they have to first disclose, you know, every other source of money that they're going after through asbestos trusts, and that they would have to pursue those first before they get a larger reward or before they pursue a larger reward in court. Republicans have described this as essentially a transparency issue. Democrats say what you're doing is making it harder for people who've been injured seriously, sometimes fatally, to get their justice in court. And they say that by adding these delays, what you're going to do is, in some cases, people might die before they get a chance to see out their lawsuit.
And finally, Sean, we're going to wrap up talking about a bill in the legislature that would require insurance companies to cover oral chemotherapy. Now, the bill has bipartisan support, but Senate Republicans blocked it from coming to the floor for a vote. You want to catch us up on what happened there?
Yeah, this is one of those where I'm not sure that the average person would exactly understand what's going on here. And I don't mean understand it in the sense that, you know, they wouldn't get it. I think they would question the logic of the way the legislature works sometimes. You know, essentially, as you mentioned, you have this bill mandating insurance coverage for oral chemotherapy, has broad bipartisan support. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald actually told reporters today if this bill came up for a vote in the Senate, it probably has the votes to pass. And so you hear that and you think, okay, why is that not happening? And it's because Senate Republicans are divided on the issue. And Fitzgerald said that you have some Senate Republicans who, you know, he represents as majority leader, who have serious issues with a health insurance mandate, and they do on any insurance mandate. And he says they don't really want to budge and they don't want to see this go forward. So while this bill might have the votes necessary in the Senate and actually has several Republican co-sponsors, it doesn't have everybody on board in Senator Fitzgerald's caucus. And so it's just sitting there for now.
So it's stalled out now. Could you see it going forward down the road?
And nobody is saying it's done for the session. Even in talking again to Senator Erpenbach, a Democratic co-sponsor of that bill, he's saying that he hopes that Senator Fitzgerald is able to round up with the votes on this before the end of session. Senator Fitzgerald's talking about hoping to get something together, but you know, the essence of what the bill does require insurance companies to cover this type of treatment is pretty straightforward. And so if people have a problem with that, it may be hard to, you know, to change the bill to get enough of them on board.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for coming on and talking today.
Yeah, thanks again.
That was Sean Johnson, WPR State Capitol reporter.
Up next, we'll take your calls on another bill. This one would eliminate the requirements for schools in Wisconsin to be open 180 days a year. This is partly geared toward when schools are making up for snow days. It would say they don't have to stay open extra days. They can just make it up with extra hours. But it appears like that it could open the door for schools to be open fewer days for a whole year, but have longer school days. What do you think about that idea? Do you think it's a good idea to have students for longer days, but fewer days throughout the year? Why or why not? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org.
We're taking your calls now on a bill that would end the requirement for schools to be open for 180 days a year.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. The bill passed the Wisconsin State Senate unanimously yesterday. It'll head to the Assembly. It would allow schools to extend daily hours instead of forcing them to stay open later in the summer to make up for snow days. That's part of the deal. Schools would still have to meet an hourly quota for the year.
Supporters are saying that this is a cost savings measure for school districts. The state's Department of Public Instruction and the Wisconsin Association of School Boards both back the bill.
The AP reports that if schools as early as next school year wanted to extend the school day and stay open for, say, 160 days, the bill allows them to do that. What do you think? You can call in at 800-642-1234. Any teachers, school administrators, or parents out there, what do you make of this idea? Again, 800-642-1234. We'll start things off with Amy in Sparta. Amy, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My comment was I would rather see them do this proposal, having the kids there later for a longer day, I guess, than the other proposal that they're looking at in the district that I am currently in, and that's to start earlier in August and then go until June 8th with three breaks throughout the year.
Oh, yeah, they call it like year-round schooling or trimesters. There's a couple different versions of that.
Right, and then they're already at school. They've already got the buses going. So instead of adding more days, just keeping the kids there longer, you know, whether it's half hour or whatever.
All right. Amy, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in at 800-642-1234.
And we'll go next to John, who is joining us in Whitewater. Hi, John.
Hi. I was very interested to hear you're picking up this important legislation, and having been involved in public schools, I strongly support the repeal of the 180-day mandate. There are a number of reasons, but one of them would be to overcome the half-day problem. At this point, because of the 180-day and with the requirement of professional development, schools either start late or dismiss early, and then they have professional development. And if you talk to any teacher, I think they'll tell you that many, many, many students skip school, and with good reason. There is essentially a non-day, but because they meet half a day, it counts as a whole day on the 180 days.
All right. So, John, getting there at the way that the 180-day requirement can wreak havoc sometimes with the schedule and the school day itself.
Thanks for the call, John. We'll go to Peggy in Warrens next. Peggy, hi.
Hi. I have a 15-year-old, and he gets on the bus at 6:30. And he gets off the bus at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and he's one of the older kids. So I think a longer school day is a terrible idea, and a lot of kids really lose a lot over the summer as it is, having that three-month break. So I really don't think a shorter school year is a good solution. Maybe a longer school year would be.
All right. Thanks a lot, Peggy, for calling. And Karen on Facebook also says, I think we need a longer school year with a shorter summer break. Maybe on the same page, worried about that summer learning loss.
All right. Thanks for both those comments. And let's move on to Sheila in Iron River. Hi, Sheila.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm right with everybody else. I think the whole system should be completely changed and kids should go year-round.
And is that to address sort of the learning loss that can happen over summer, or you just think it's a better way to go?
Absolutely. To retain that information that they lose when they're out, definitely they need to have some time to be out and be kids, but they lose too much over the summer, and they really, we don't need kids working in the fields anymore.
All right. So the agricultural underpinning maybe for this, the summer's off thing isn't there anymore, according to Sheila. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts.
We'll go now to Beth with us in Sheboygan. Beth, hi.
Hi. I just feel that administrators and school boards need to think about what's best for kids first and foremost. for some kids, that seven-hour day is already too much of a school day for them. So to add time on to their day may not be beneficial, and you're not going to see the academic performances improve necessarily by just increasing your amount of time there. I feel like you could see more behaviors, more frustration, more just more kids that have a less love of school because they're expected to do too much rigor included into one day.
Beth, thanks so much for your call.
And thank you so much for all your calls on this topic. And you can keep the conversation going on our Facebook page. You can find us by searching Central Time on WPR.